Some days are terrible. You wish that you were dead. And some days are magical, like great banana bread. Someday we'll be friends with the voices in our heads. The voices in our heads.
Hello, human beings. How you doing? Happy Monday. Welcome to the voices in our heads. Congrats on not killing yourself, guys. It's fucking tough out there. It's tough. And it's muggy now. Ew. To everybody listening and watching this with curly hair, my thoughts and prayers are with you. We'll get to that later. Two dates I want to promote, okay? One, this Thursday, June 13th, is Hooch at Zinc Par. Zinc Par? Also Zinc Bar. It's where I used to have the old Glamour Puss. The show starts at 7 p.m. sharp. Doors are at 6:30. There's a ticket link for tickets on my bio at Christina Hutch. We have a great lineup for you. And come. The first one is tonight while I'm recording this. So hopefully it went well. I always forget that like hosting and producing a show in New York City is just, it's a very stressful experience. But I've been doing it for a really long time. I haven't done a show in a while, but I was like, you know what? I need, you know, let's put something else on my plate that'll stress me out. But I'm glad I'm doing it, but I'm doing it with this comedian Haley, who hasn't ever produced a show before. She's an incredible stand-up. She's only been doing it a couple of years. Her material is fuck. I'm like, dude, you have like a Harvard SNL writer mind. She's very smart. And so she's like, I'm watching her have the stress that I used to have when I first started doing Glamour Puss. It's so funny. But yeah, come to Hooch. It's going to be great. There's going to be, you're going to have the ability to write down a topic, current event, anything you want, to a piece of paper, fold it up, put it in a fishbowl. Maybe the comics will draw it during their set and then riff on it. Isn't that crazy? That's crazy. Also, if you're in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, where you at? Wawa country. Ooh, ooh. Friday, July 19th, I'm going to be at Soul Joel's in Pennsylvania. I think that's what he calls it still. Just save the date. There's no ticket link yet, but it's going to be amazing. Also, I ran a fucking 5K.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was so cool. The only thing I was really nervous about was you had to fucking line up at like eight o'clock. And yeah. But the race started at 9. I'm like, we're not doing that. I'm not doing that. I got my bib. I was very excited to have a bib. I was like so giddy about these little tiny things that meant you were running a marathon. Or not a marathon, a 5K, which is 3.1 miles. So it's not that far. I placed, I think it was like 1,800 people. I placed 553rd, which is cool. I don't really care about that part, but
that's good.
It's 30 minutes. So it's about like 10 minutes a mile, I guess, which is, you know, that's not, I could have ran faster, but I didn't. Next time. It was really cool. It's so cool to run with a group of people as I thought it was going to be. It's just everyone. It's just, we're all out there running, man. And it's just good for us. You know, we chose to do this thing to make our lives a little better that day, you know, and connect with people. And it was a 5K and it was a local 5K. So there wasn't a lot of applause. There wasn't as much applause as I would have liked to have. But the few blocks that there were, like a kid going, yay, I guess, that felt great. But applaud more next time, okay, guys? Because it's one of the, like, the times that I've marched in the Gay Pride Parade for the Marriage Equality organization, it feels like, I know this is me making pride 100% about me, which is absolutely not cool. But like internally, it feels really great to have, like, you just walk like miles and miles and everyone's just applauding you. It's so awesome. Instant mood booster. Instant mood booster. And we're all just there to celebrate love. I just loved it. I watched this documentary, this crime documentary. It was from 2013, I think, on HBO. I watched it because the title made me laugh. The title is, There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, what the fuck's wrong with Aunt Diane? We gotta watch this. Dude, and I'm gonna give you spoilers. It's an old documentary, but it's unsolved. Aunt Diane died. And everybody's from New York. Everyone's from Staten Island. And they all talk like this. A really lovely family. This woman, Diane, has a kid. I think she has two kids. And her husband, and they were camping, and she had her sister-in-law's three kids in the car with her. So what happened was she was going the wrong way on the Tacoma State Parkway for 2 miles.
Tacomic.
Hell yeah. Glad you're here. And crashed at 55 miles an hour head on into another vehicle. Everybody died instantly. And there were, she was driving four kids in her car.
I vaguely remember this.
So that, yeah, Colin was like, oh yeah, I remember that crash. Yeah. I was like, whoa, I don't remember that crash.
I think I do remember this.
Yo, it was crazy. And then you looked into like, holy shit. And then they talk about how the news villainized her. And then in turn, the entire family, they're already grieving the loss of Diane. Okay. And then all these children that were in the car, one survived with kind of minor injuries. It was amazing. But all these children died instantly. And it was so sad. And then this family has to deal with like, was she fucking drunk? They did have a toxicology report. And it revealed that she had the equivalent of 10 drinks in her and marijuana. And I was like, oh, that sucks. And so you hear that as a person just reading the news and you're like, fuck this chick. And then you go on Instagram or Facebook and tell the family to go fuck themselves. I'm like, this is a terrible system that we have going here, guys. But the whole documentary was Diane's husband and Diane's sister-in-law were like, she's not a drinker. She maybe drinks once a year. They just came back from a camping trip though. So there was a handle of Absolut vodka in the car. But that was, you know, when you go camping or you go to the beach, you bring food and then you bring liquor and you bring beer. And then whatever you don't finish, you bring back with you in the car. So I'm like, the fact that there was a Absolut bottle means nothing. I know you're not supposed to have an open container in a car, but like if you're traveling from a campsite to your home, that makes all the sense in the world that you'd have that. So I was like, what the fuck? That ain't Diane's fault. But then they said the toxicology report revealed she had like the equivalent of 10 drinks. And I was like, that might be Diane's fault a little bit. But then the family was so hellbent on her not being drunk. And I'm like, shit, they were so stressed out. And I was like, what's wrong with Aunt Diane? And the kid, they called Diane like 20 minutes before the accident. And she was being erratic. And then one of the kids in the van called and said, something's wrong with Aunt Diane, hence the title of the documentary. And they're like, she can't see and her head hurts. So I'm like, maybe she had a stroke. They're trying to get a tox. It was a riveting documentary, but the there's no conclusion. What the fuck happened to Aunt Diane? I don't know. And that's why I was watching this, screaming at the television the way a man screams at a football game. And I was like, you guys got to get a medium. You live in, was it? No, they lived in Long Island, not Staten Island. You live in Long Island. That's where all the mediums come from. Get a medium. And if I could do it, I'd freaking DM you, Diane's husband. But I don't know how to do that yet, but it's going to happen. But that's how you solve that. That's how you solve that. We need more mediums, guys. Go to the school in England, Arthur Findlay College, to become a medium. Because then the crime units, shit's solved in 2 seconds. You get a reputable medium that you've put through a series of rigorous testing, like the Forever Family Foundation. They have a series of testing they put all the mediums through because they're not fucking around with that. And I know some people... There are people in this world that pretend to be a medium, and that's fucked up. Don't do that. That's very mean and rude and taking advantage of grieving people. But man, I was like, if we had just mediums, there wouldn't be a documentary. Maybe they would. And the end of it is, here's the conclusion. This medium was like, sorry, guys, Diane actually had a drinking problem and she didn't tell you guys, or whatever the answer is. But there was something wrong with Aunt Diane and we still don't know what it is. I was thinking about this. You know how different cultures, I'm always fascinated by this, different cultures have different views of what is considered rude, which I think is so interesting because that just goes to show you, we're all brainwashed by whatever fucking culture we're in. You know what I mean? Sometimes the habits of your culture are beneficial, but sometimes they're fucking not. And you just do them because you're like, am I a good girl now? Do you like me? You know? But like spitting, for example, in some cultures, it's rude. And in other cultures, it's just you're clearing your throat. Who cares? I love that. I love like rude. I love when something is rude in one culture and not in another. I think it's very fascinating because then that's just proof that like it's all in the eye of the beholder and the culture. Okay. But there is something that is, I guess, considered rude. I don't know if it's a cultural thing. Maybe it's an American thing. I don't know. That I don't think is rude, but I feel like you guys are going to disagree with me. And that is when you're on an airplane and you get a window seat, because you always get the window seat, and you put the shade up and you keep it up because you want to look at the clouds and you want to look at everything. And then everyone around you thinks that's rude. Well, I think that's rude that you think it's rude. Okay. Do you think that's rude, Michael?
Say it again.
So when you're on a plane and somebody, sometimes there's one person that has the window up for the flight because they want to look out the window and, all right, check for aliens, whatever. But it doesn't matter why you want to look out the window. You want to look out the fucking window. You got the window seat. Okay.
I'm with you so far.
But then other people around you think that's rude.
And they have the window open?
Yeah. And then they ask you to close the shade. And I go, well, now I don't want to have a fight with, like, now I don't want to have ill will because it's bright.
I don't think that's rude at all.
Right?
At all.
Okay. Because,
yeah, the window open on a plane, that's normal.
Well, when it's like a overnight flight, I guess, or when the sun's really bright. Because look, if I open my window shade on my window seat during the flight, and the biggest beam of sun is coming in and is about to burn the pages of the book my neighbor is reading. All right. Okay. I'll put the shade down, see if we can get that bright sun ray out of the way.
But that's not on you. I think
get an eye mask.
Right. Well, or I just think that they have a right to ask, hey, it's really bright. Do you mind?
Of course.
I don't think that it's rude to ask to put it down, but I don't think it's rude to naturally like look out the window.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, and keep your window because
it's a preferential thing. You have to your row is a little island, a little community. You guys got to work it out.
Exactly.
You know?
Totally.
It's like reclining. Is it rude to recline on the plane?
I never think it's rude to recline. You got to work it out. I had one person one time, and I fly a lot. One person that was sitting behind me was a bigger person, and I went to recline, and they're like, excuse me, can you put your seat back up? And I said, honestly, no, I can't. I need these 2 inches. Sorry. But then I looked back and he was really uncomfortable. So I'm like, oh, fucking, now what do I do?
Right.
And I put it up a little. I gave him a compromise. I just did 1 inch. I'm like, you know.
That's politics.
It's not. I feel for tall people, big people, and tall people. And if you're big and tall, these airplane seats are fucked. There's no room. Unless you're a rich person and can afford to fly first class, you're fucked. Like if you're a tall person, if you got long legs, or if you're just a big boned motherfucker, just a big person, the airlines just tell you to go fuck yourself, really. And that's not fair. Like I can barely, in the back, when I sit in the back of the plane, I could barely get my bag from underneath the seat in front of me. That's how, like, and I'm tiny, dude. I can't imagine being a tall motherfucker. But yeah, that's the other thing. I was talking to somebody maybe a year ago, and they're like, yeah, I don't recline my seat. That's rude. I'm like, that's rude. What?
I would
never get mad at the person in front of me for reclining their seat. That is their God-given right, and I want them to be comfortable.
I think it's more likely to be thought of as rude than I had never even heard that about the window before.
Okay.
But I will say, I still think it's the same. To me, it's the same rules apply. Like if the person behind you, like if you look over and you're like, hey, do you mind if I recline a scooch?
No, that's, you know, fine.
Like that, I think that makes it the world of difference.
Yeah.
I think being rudeness in general is just more about, it's just more about like not thinking about other people. So
totally.
I don't think anything is inherently rude if there's communication. You know what I mean?
That's a good point.
If you ask before you do something and say like, hey, I want to do this, then it might affect you. Do you mind if I do it?
Yeah. And you
even
know what?
Smoking, like, at casinos and stuff.
I'm like, can't smoke on an airplane anymore, Mikey.
No, I know. But I'm just talking about like life in general. I think about smoking all the time. It's like context matters, where you are matters. And like they've gotten rid of smoking in bars and everything.
Thank God.
But if you go to Atlantic City or Vegas.
I was there, yep.
You can smoke at a blackjack table.
Yep.
And it is your right to do so. But even when I do that, if I smoke a cigar or something, if I go play blackjack, if I can see somebody's uncomfortable, I'll put it out, you know?
Yeah. And as a smoker, whenever I smoke, I get the fuck away from people. I'm not going to be near people. I don't want to subject them. If God forbid there's a child walking down the street, I don't want them to take in my secondhand smoke. That's for adults. Okay. But yeah, I always try to like move away, and I would never, smoking indoors. If you smoke indoors, that's fine. That's your thing. But like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it. That violates my rude quota for me personally. But I totally get if someone just wants to smoke.
If you were in a place where it was encouraged to smoke inside, then do you smoke inside?
No, I think I just have like a bad, I hate indoor smoking.
Okay.
I hate it. If there was a world where they're like, Christina, the only time you can smoke a cigarette is indoors, I'd quit. Shit, I wish.
Really?
Yes.
You don't like it that much?
I don't like it that much.
Wow.
Because inherently, smoking is disgusting and it's not actually good.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't actually feel good. It doesn't actually relax me. I just say it does so that I feel better about it. Alan Carr did tell me that in the book, How to Quit. But yeah, okay. So, well, if you're sitting next to me in a plane and you're really dependent upon that window shade being down, get your eye mask, boo-boo. Get that eye mask, because I'm looking for aliens, okay? Because there's been way too many. And I caught one on a plane that I was it was something. I don't know what it was. It wasn't clear enough for me to go 100%. But then that lady in New York, she was landing at LaGuardia. She just so happened to be filming, here we go, New York City. And she caught a fucking UFO, okay? And also, guess what? One of the latest near-death experience videos I watched on YouTube, this woman, lovely woman, I think she's in her 50s or 60s. She's a healer now. She has all these books. She had a couple of near-death experiences, but she's like, you know, she gets messages about the future, as a lot of them do. And she's like, yeah, I don't know if it'll be around for this lifetime, but we are approaching this age of like 2035 to 2045, 2050 of enlightenment. So there's going to be a good period, because right now all the corrupt people in the world are slowly getting outed. So it feels like the world is going to shit, but it's actually getting better. And when you're on the process of getting better, it hurts like hell, okay? It doesn't feel good. It feels like ass. You want to die when you're healing. So just FYI. But then one of the things she said was, she goes, I don't know what your opinions are about aliens. And I was like, wait, what? You have my attention. And she was like, there's going to be landings. There's going to be sightings that are so undeniable that everybody's going to film, everybody's going to upload to the internet, and the powers that be and all the governments that are trying to keep this under wraps are just not going to be able to anymore. And I was like, yes, yes, come to me, aliens. And guys, if you're listening to the show and you've had an alien experience and you don't fucking tell me about it, we're not friends. But you can DM me, at Christina Hutch. I want to know, because you never know. You start talking about this shit, then people tell you things. That woman that DM'd me, who worked for an oil company where she had to put speakers deep into the ocean to listen for pods of whales and dolphins to make sure that the oil company could dig there. I'm paraphrasing here. And then she sat, because aliens are always in the ocean too. And she sent me this. She sent me a sound bite of the sound that she picked up. And she goes, I don't know if she was a marine biologist or what her actual title was. But she's like, that's not whales. And I was like, because you know what? Because it's aliens. Okay? So if you got alien videos, DM them to your girl, at Christina Hutch. Thank you. Okay, so I need your all's help. My building, my apartment building, I renewed my lease. That was a big mistake, but whatever. We all make mistakes, okay? I'm going to make so many more mistakes before I die. So I just have to be easy on myself, Christina. The elevators in my building are death traps. There's four. And very often, sometimes the management will email us and say, hey, we're going to do elevator repair work this time. So, and that's very helpful, because it can take 20 minutes to get downstairs when that's happening. So if I have a heads up, I'll prepare. You know, if I'm going out to run and the elevator's taking forever, I try to take advantage of the moment, turn it into a positive experience, do a wall sit until the elevator comes. And then I do that. And by the time I get downstairs, I can't fucking walk. So I just go back upstairs. And don't run. So yesterday I got stuck in an elevator twice. One time was it was packed. There was only one elevator working. Everyone was so pissed. I happened to be in such a good mood yesterday. And when that's the case and the elevators are all fucked and everyone's cranky, I'm like, guys, this is just like an opportunity to practice patience. but when I'm in a bad mood, I'm like, fuck this shit. I'm late for, I'm just making shit up. Like, I missed a TV pitch or whatever. My wrath. I operate in those two extremes. But yesterday I was in a great mood and the elevators weren't working. And it managed to get to the point where I was like, okay, guys, no, for real, this is fucked up. And I was telling the staff in our building is really cool, but the elevators are so bad. And I'm like, you guys, I told this to the staff, but they have no power. I'm like, if they just gave us half a month's rent off or a free month's rent, I wouldn't bitch. To be honest, one of the times I got stuck in the elevator, I was in line behind this couple that was taking their baby home from the hospital for the first time. They lived on the 28th floor. They're not going to walk up. And I told the guy, because they had all these bags, I'm like, hey, I'm on 26. If these don't come and you got to get upstairs, I'll help you carry shit. Like, it's teamwork, baby. But the elevator did end up coming and then it got stuck. So I left. But I'm like, man, maybe I can rally everybody in the building. I had this like fantasy of slipping notes under every single person in my building's door and be like, hey guys, we got a band together, right? Because it's elevator situation. But then I was thinking too, what if I got the staff involved from the building as well? Because they're sick of this shit as well. And also they have to deal with the cranky residents. I can't imagine that's a pleasure, you know? But it is like when getting in and out of your home, from your home to the outside, when that takes upwards of 25 minutes, that's a problem. That's a problem. Just taking my dog out for a walk real quick, it's not a quick endeavor when the elevators don't work. And one time I was in the elevator with Kevin and it dropped like five floors. And I was like, oh, fuck. I thought I was going to die. And I was like, well, if this is the time, then this is the time. So one beautiful thing that came out of that was I'm really not afraid to die. That's pretty fucking cool. And I will haunt everybody if I do die early.
All right.
But I don't think I will. But if I do, see you shortly. I told Colin, I was like, whoever dies first has to haunt the other one. Deal. He goes, you're so fucking weird. I was like, I know. It's a problem. But I'm like, oh, I got to rally the troops. But here's where I need assistance or ideas from people. And you could DM me at Christina Hutch. And if I don't resonate with the idea, I'll throw it away. But just, you know, it can't hurt to ponder it. I don't know if I should rally the troops. And then when I rally the troops, what do we do? Do we ask? I don't want to pose it as like a threat, but here are the actions that I'm thinking of that we could take. Contact somebody from the Department of Buildings, even though they already come for regular inspections now. And they're like, these elevators suck. There was one guy that works for a piece of cake moving company. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me in one of the elevator rides. He goes, why do you guys live in this building? Every time I have to do a move in this building, none of the elevators work.
That building's bad news.
It's awful, but
it's like a low-key, like bad building.
100%.
Yeah.
So give us free rent and I ain't going to say shit. I won't reveal the address. That's what I was trying to think. I don't want to threaten whoever makes the decision of giving us free rent. Because the one woman, one resident was like, I asked them, can you discount our rent? And they responded like, well, we don't even know what kind of number that would look like. Okay, I'll give you a number, bitch. How about we give you a number? But the course of actions we could take are tell the Department of Buildings, because the amount of times I've gotten stuck or the elevator has dropped when I was in it. And there's mothers in that building, families with strollers and babies.
That is terrifying.
Yes. And the amount, on July 4th last year, my friend Donna came over to my party. The elevators stopped working. And as we were going to the elevator bank, firefighters were prying the doors open. And then these people, the elevator was halfway through the floor. The people were crawling out. And Donna just went home.
Fuck that.
Because she's like, I'm not climbing 26 stairs. I just worked a 12-hour shift at the hospital. And I'm like, that's fair. That's fair. But I'm like, damn, dude, you're fucking up my party, you know? So I think we need to get clear on what our ask is. And I'm going to say 2 months free rent. And if you don't do that, but I need to pose it differently because I don't want to say threat. I don't want to like threaten them because that's not kind, but it is a threat. We'll tell the Department of Buildings. Well, I'll get a reporter because you know local New York reporters. Oh, if there's a building in a hot neighborhood that is an absolute shit show to live in, they're going to want to know. They're going to want to know, I think. I know some people from New York One, one of my favorite local news networks. Shout out if you are in New York One or love New York One or know New York One, really. But I was thinking that. And then, you know, we could all band the residents together and leave bad Google reviews for the building. And then every time we see somebody with that sheet of paper, if you want to look at apartments in my building, you go to the building a couple blocks away they're owned by the same people. You get a sheet of paper with all these door codes and you go up and down. So we always know who's looking at new apartments because they have this sheet of paper. It's the same sheet of paper I have when I looked. We will be very diligent telling them not to move here. And everybody's moving out of the building too. So I'm like, we got to leverage this somehow. But I don't know how else to leverage it. Do you know?
Good luck.
So if y'all have any ideas.
Not against them. It's not going to work.
I used to work in real estate and I know the DOB, the Department of Buildings, is super strict. They've been to the building, but I don't know. There's got to be something I can do to get free rent, you know? But I want free rent for all of us. I don't want just free rent for me. I want everybody in the building to get free rent. Do you know what I'm saying? That's why I'm trying to band people together. But I think if I just slip a piece of paper under the door and say, yo, guys, email me if you're sick of this shit. But I won't say shit because there's families. Then we'll see what happens. But yeah, I got stuck in the elevator twice yesterday. Thank God I was in a good mood. Thank God. Today was a little I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Every day is different. Does that happen to everybody else? Like, are your moods different?
Yes.
That's so fucking annoying.
It's called being a human being.
Ugh. Just pick a mood and stay with it. Every day is different. It's so exhausting. But yeah, I was in a little cranky of a mood today. But I was writing this list down because I was it's very muggy out in New York City, and I was going to a meeting for commercial and voiceover agent. I want to do voiceover work because I like my voice a lot, and I'm great at ad reads. I love doing ad reads. Oh my God. If you want me to do an ad read for you, at Christine Hutch. It's so soothing. So I was going to meet with them, but I got the wrong address. The wrong address was given to me because the woman who gave it to me didn't copy. It was supposed to be, you know, 1127 Broadway, but she only copied like 127 Broadway, for example. So I was in the wrong part of town. So I had to reschedule it. But I was running late because I couldn't find the building. And I hate running late. I hate it. But then I was like, you know what? You've been doing all this work on yourself, Christina. Fucking surrender. Just be late. Then you looked for the building. You can't find it. That's okay. So we rescheduled the meeting. And because of that, I wrote this list of things that help me when I'm in a bad mood. Okay, so these are things that make my cranky mood a little bit better. Being in a car and calling a guy on a bike a fucking moron. Love that. Being on a bike and calling a guy in a car a fucking idiot. Mm-hmm. Love that one. Being a pedestrian and crossing the street as slow as I possibly can as another car is trying to turn and is very upset over my pace. And then sometimes I'll be walking like super slow. If I sense them, with cars, I could tell the mood of the driver by how they're driving. I'd know immediately. And if they're getting impatient, I'll just turn and give them a little Mona Lisa smile and then do this and then a little wave and I'll keep walking and they get so mad. And it makes me so happy. and then the other thing, this is a nice one. When a stranger does something kind, like hold a door, my mood instantly melts. Or if I could piss somebody off in a very petty way, instant mood melting. Oh, when you got to get stuff off your chest and you're a New Yorker, hop on a fucking city bike. There will be pedestrians in the bike lane and you can yell at them and call them a fucking idiot or whatever you want to call them. Don't use slurs. Fucking idiot's good enough. And it feels great. It feels great. I learned yesterday that Jake Gyllenhaal is legally blind. And it's always been like that for him. And I was just pondering. I'm like, does Jake Gyllenhaal not know how hot he is? Because that's crazy. Maybe that's why he's so nice. So great to work with because he doesn't know what a dime piece that face is. He's got to know how hot his body is because he works out. But he's so hot. Like you kind of got to see yourself from afar to go, am I hot or not? You know, we all assess ourselves, but sometimes a close up mirror ain't going to do it. Like you need to see yourself in the wild, right? Through video or photo or something. And if you're legally blind, you can't catch yourself in the window of a store and go, God damn, I look good today. So maybe this whole time, Jake Gyllenhaal was blessed to be born super hot, but can't fucking see it. And that's probably why he's a nice person. That's my theory of the week. All right, guys, you know what time it is? Do you know what fucking time it is? Well, you see, it's time for some fuckboy theater, okay? Okay. Fuckboy theater, it is time. It's so muggy out. All the fuckboys' balls are humid and curly and gross. And don't show me your balls, because I don't want to see them. Get your balls removed. Women have to do so much stuff to our bodies. You can at least take your balls out the picture so we can have a better time with you. Okay. This is such... Somebody just sent me the screenshot, so I love a fresh fuckboy theater. This is this is so funny. This is so confusing. This is a Hinge DM. It's a Hinge DM between a woman, a lovely lady, probably gives back to the world and her community and her friends and family, and just a piece of hot trash named Richard. So Richard likes this woman's photo. And then he says, and this is in a quote, "Now I can give up pork, but those white women, damn, how you deal with it, boy." Jamie Foxx quote in the movie Ali, crying laughing face emoji, watching it now, LOL. She doesn't respond to that. So 3 days later, he says, I had to Photoshop strawberries into children's dishware for several hours today. LOL. Facepalm emoji. And she never responded to that either. That's crazy. So then 3 days later, he goes, I would love to do yoga. And scene. That's our Fuckboy Theater today. What the fuck, Richard? How about you do some meditating so that your fucking topics of conversation are a little bit more connected? Do you know what I'm saying? And also, if we don't get back to you after the third time, it's a sign. It's a sign. Okay. There was such an epic man spreader on the subway today. I took a picture of it.
I forgot about man spreading.
Well, and it made me go, okay, so there's a lot of contention between men and women. There always has been, but I watched this man-spreading man. He was asleep, and he took up the whole, it was a two-seater on the subway. He took up the whole thing. His feet were on the seat. He was, you know, he wasn't homeless. He was a guy. He was just a guy. But, like, his legs were spread so far apart, and his one leg was up on the seat, and he was sleeping. And I'm like, dude, and then, you know, sometimes people can complain about man-spreading, and then you look at the actual photo of the guy, and you're like, ah. But also, too, you can go, hey, excuse me. You know, you can do that. You can ask. Hey, can you fucking move? How about you close those legs, you whore? But this guy was really manspreading it. And in a way that I would classify as rude, but that's just my personal expression of my opinion. But it made me realize when every woman, and if you're listening to this and you're not a woman, I hope you know that women just get in these zones. Sometimes it's rare. Sometimes it's common. Depends on that woman's life where we're just sick of guys, sick of men. Okay. And I'm very interested by that. When I watch this man spreader, cause I've certainly gotten in those moods before. It's usually when a man in my life or I see a man in the wild just do something so fucking abhorrent that I'm like, ugh, I can't talk to you people for a really long time. Okay. But this man spreader made me think of that concept. And I go, I think this is a contributing factor. Women are conditioned from such an early age to be polite, to contain yourself. Don't be sloppy. Don't be loud. Don't be obnoxious. Don't be big. We are trained. And even if we had great parents who were both feminists, if we were raised by two feminist lesbians that just fucking, you know, worked for the UN, one worked for the ACLU, you know, we would still have these because they're part of our society where women just feel like they need to make themselves a little smaller. And just what it really is we are so fucking mindful of how we come across all the time. And it's exhausting. And when you see a man who has not been conditioned to be mindful about how he is, one, it's not that man's fault, but also fuck you. Fuck you. You could just prance around life. Not caring what anybody thinks of you? Oh, must be nice, sir. Must be nice, sir. You know? And it's not man's fault, but it really gets to me sometimes. That's the rub for me in a lot of ways. Cause I'm like, man, sometimes you're like, if you're sleeping with a guy, you're dating a guy, and maybe he's like, he presents himself as a little sloppy, but he loves himself and he's kind and he's confident. And then you get naked with him and you're like, wow, you just don't care that's the deal, huh? That's amazing. Not in a shamey way, in a way of like, I want that. How do you get that? The answer is 36 years of undoing conditioning. And it's not going to happen. But I do think that women are, it's just such a pain in the dick to be mindful of how you are all the time. And that's not every woman falls for that. I have. Wish I didn't. But I have. But I think that's a big, big reason. Okay. So I want to read some parts from chapter 6 of The Mountain is You, Transforming Self-Sabotage into Self-Mastery by Brianna Wiest. The part, I fucking ordered that part from my Zoom H6 recorder and it's still not here.
What's the part you need?
So the fucking battery case won't stay in. And what was the part? I forget what it was called. I ordered it so long ago. But I called the people over at Zoom H6 headquarters. And they're like, oh, you just need this. And they sent it to me. But I'm like, well, you didn't send it to me because I didn't get it. Anyway, so that is all to say the bonus readings aren't up. But the next book I'm going to be reading, I will have the part by then and there will be bonus readings. Okay. I'm going to do a deep dive. I already talked about this book before years and years ago, but it is such a staple and people DM me about this book all the time. And it's the one book that people are like, dude, thank you so much for telling me about this book. It changed my life. 6 Pillars of Self-Esteem by Nathaniel Brandon. We can all use more self-esteem, guys. Okay. And I love that book so much because he takes the emotion out of self-esteem, which is exactly how you like figure it out. So it's crazy, right? That you can even do that. So, okay. So this is a reading from chapter 6. What's the title? The title of the chapter is Building a New Future. Oh, the other thing I wanted to tell you guys real quick. I started therapy yesterday with a new therapist. Thank you. Yay, you need it. Thank God. I just walked by her office. She lives a block away from me. And I was like, oh, this is therapy. I'm going to email her. I emailed her and she said, want to come in here? And I'm like, yep. And then I did it. Dude, I haven't done therapy in a couple of years. I needed a break. I'm so glad I took a break because I was so sick of talking about this stuff. And then I was like, okay, now I see there's so many habits and stuff that I do that I don't want to be doing anymore. So it's time to go back to therapy. And also I need my therapist to be a woman and I need her to be very calm and grounded. And this was exactly this woman. I don't know if she was my mom age. She's probably a little bit younger, but for me, that's important because I got, you know, a mother wound. I don't know if you guys have heard that. She was great. I was already feeling vulnerable. Like I was filling out the intake form via email the day before. And she was like, what brings you to therapy? I'm like, and I just started crying. I'm like, damn, I really do need to go back to therapy. And I got to her office and I could talk about anything that has happened in my life, like on a podcast microphone or to a friend or whatever. And I don't cry, but I know that when I'm in a therapist's office and I talk about it, the fucking waterworks come out, which I think is very funny. But I told her my spiel and she said something to me that every single therapist I've ever had has said to me. And she goes, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. And then I just go, it is a lot, right? Right. It's a lot. But I told her all the things. She nailed me in 50 minutes. And I was like, ouchies, but also I feel like I'm in the right place. She goes, you have a wounded inner child that leads the way way too often. And I was like, how the fuck did you guess that in 50 minutes? Is it that obvious? I try so hard to hide it. And she also said, I said, give me homework. Oh, the other thing she told me. And I'm curious if you think this about me, Mike, or just people in my life.
Yes.
She goes, you are so hard on yourself. And she is correct. But I really try to hide that part and just keep it to me.
Do I think that? Let me think about that for a second. In what aspects of your life do you think?
I bully myself.
Yeah.
I'm never doing enough or I'm not doing something right. Or for example, if I'm late to a meeting, oh, you fucking idiot. Like, I just beat myself up. Mm. I just beat myself up. But if it doesn't.
I guess so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't say it's something it's not like my first thought when I think about.
What would be your first thought of like, what's my issue? Let's just.
Issue?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Be real.
I don't know.
Be honest with me.
Believes in ghosts?
Oh, that's your issue that you don't. So I'll take that.
That would be my issue.
Oh, P.S. You know, I told this therapist that I want to become a psychic medium one day. And wouldn't you believe it? She told me she is really good friends with one of the most profound mediums she's ever met and seen and heard of. And I was like, well, goddamn lady, I'm in the right place, aren't I? We read all the same books. She was talking about we need to take the thorns out. And I was like, you've read Michael Singer's Untethered Soul too? And she's like, oh yeah, I have it in my shelf. We really nerded out. But yeah, she said she nailed me. She said the wounded inner child leads the way too often for you. you are way too hard on yourself. The second she said that, I just started bawling. I'm like, I am too hard on myself. What? And then she said, I told her I want homework because I love homework. And she goes, the only thing you need to worry about, because I told her about the money issues. And she goes, money is your sense of safety. So just work on your budget every day. Work on your budget every day so that your sense of safety remains. You need to make sure that you're protecting your sense of safety in that way. And money is safety. And I was like, shit, doc, you're good. And this was only the consultation. So I'm very excited. Very, very excited. Also, and this is not a substitute for therapy in any way, but I do have a Patreon and you should sign up. Once a week, we do group Zoom therapy. And it's a really, we had one this past week. There were so many people. I had to give a time limit for sharing, which I'm like, that's so cool. Because then everybody, not everybody who got to who wanted to go went, but in the future when there's a certain amount of people, I'm just going to do time limit, so we can hear from as many people that want to talk. But it was so good. There were so many people. They all had such a variety of stuff going on. Some of it was really fucking intense. Some of it was like just them talking out their newly found self-actualization, And I'm like, this is, again, I'll say this again because I really mean it. It's the only place in my life where I leave it and I go, I have faith in humanity that we're heading in the right place. There is no other place that I feel that way except these group Zoom therapies. So you should sign up. Patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson. Okay, so some stuff from chapter 6. This is one of my favorite parts of chapter 6. The title of this section is Becoming the Most Powerful Version of Yourself. Well, I love that, Brianna. Are you being the most powerful version of yourself?
No.
If you had to pause and think about it, the answer is probably
no.
Correct. Everybody has different facets of their personality, and we act on them based on the context that we're in. It's a social adaptation tool. You are not the same person with your friends as you are with your parents. That is correct. Moving through these easily is a sign of high psychological function. Well, I guess I'm low. We are acquainted with the versions of ourselves that our current life requires, but we know who we need to be at work, who we need to be at home, or in love. But we are often unfamiliar with the person we need to be in order to move our lives forward. Ouch, bitch, that's very true. In inner child work, you visualize and address your younger selves, often down to a specific age, depending on which version of you was traumatized. Well, it was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, Brianna. 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, Brianna. So I got a full house, okay? You communicate with that inner child self, learn from them, protect them, or give them guidance that they needed when they were young. And I've done inner child work by myself. There was one moment in my old apartment on 34th Street, downstairs in the bathtub, where I just had, it was a spiritual moment. I was working through some shit and just my inner kid at a certain age was right across from me in the tub. And shit just came out of my mouth. I don't even know where this, I didn't plan it. And it was, I said what I needed to hear at that age when I was being, having the shit beat out of me or whatever. And it was so healing. I cried so hard. And I forget which author I got this from, but it's a science-y. They got it from a science study. When you're crying tears that are from old feelings, from trauma, from childhood trauma, from the past, the consistency of those tears is actually a lot thicker than tears of if you're watching a sad movie. And so every time I cry, I just do a little check and I'm like, yep, this one's thicker. That makes sense. Okay. What would my most powerful self do today? The first step to becoming your most powerful self is to literally envision that person. Don't take yourself out of your current context either. Begin to ask yourself, what would the most powerful version of me do right now? That's a great question. What would they do with this day? Ooh, not what I'm doing with it. How would they respond to this challenge? Way better than I'm responding. How would they move forward? How would they think? How would they feel? Your most powerful self needs to be the CEO of your life. I love thinking about it that way. It is the person making managerial decisions, governing everything else. This is the editor-in-chief, the matriarch or patriarch. You are working for your most powerful self. Love that for all of us. Once you have a clearer image of what your most powerful self is like, then you need to evaluate what habits, traits, and behaviors are actively holding you back from fully embodying that person. Be aware of your weaknesses. I am, Brianna. Powerful people are not delusional. Oh, that's good to know. They do not believe they are perfect all the time at everything. This is not what makes them mentally strong. Instead, powerful people are very aware of their varying strengths and weaknesses. In business, powerful people will often work, outsource the tasks at which they are less skilled. In life, powerful people know where their limits are and what their triggers might be. This allows them to move through their lives with more ease and to give themselves the time and space needed to work on their faults. That sounds great, because we all got faults, y'all. I don't know if you know that. Look in the mirror. You're staring at some faults. That's okay. Gotta fix it. The ability to say to yourself, I know I struggle a lot with this, so I'm going to take my time and work on it, is one of the most powerful things you can do. And that's what we're all doing, y'all. So good for fucking us. Look at us learning and growing and changing and doing it. Ugh, here's one that I don't do well. Be willing to be disliked. I am willing to be disliked when I'm walking through a crosswalk and a cranky driver's trying to get past me. And I just look at them, give him a Mona Lisa smile. And then he honks at me and almost hits me. I love that. Love it. Makes me in such a good mood. Powerful people are not the ones who are most universally liked. They are also not the ones vying for others' approval. And that's the key. To be truly powerful person, you must be willing to be disliked. This is not to say that you behave in a way that's malicious, but it is to say that no matter what you do, others are going to judge you. And you know what? Fuck it. Powerful people know this. There is no path in life that you can take that will be free of resistance from others. And it is so important that you not only become okay with being disliked, but you anticipate it and act anyway. Act on purpose. Powerful and purposeful are one in the same. To be a truly powerful person, you need to have complete unwavering conviction about what you want to create. To do this, you have to shift from a live for the moment to live for the legacy mindset. Live for the legacy? I love that. Your purpose is a dynamic evolving thing. Most of the time, it is at the intersection of what you are interested in, what you are good at, and what the world needs. Having a clear vision of what you want to create and accomplish is essential to finding your inner power. And another thing that you should do, well, that I encourage you to do, is like, interrogate your own morals and values. Do it every year. Sit down with yourself and go, what do I value? What are my moral boundaries? What do I think is wrong and what do I think is right? Because it evolves, right? Sometimes it evolves if you've been hurt. You have these morals and values that maybe aren't exactly aligned with how you want them to be. And it's just, but you're never going to know that unless you interrogate it. Or you just don't do anything. And then all your friends eventually get so uncomfortable that they say something to you. And that sucks. Because then you feel ganged up on. Even though you're not. Because you need to be told that. This is personal. Do your inner work. I mean, we already fucking are, you know. To do your inner work means to evaluate why something triggered you. I have to do this every goddamn day. Why something is upsetting you. What your life is trying to show you, and the ways you could grow from these experiences. Truly powerful people absorb what has happened to them and sort of metabolize it. They use it as an opportunity to learn, to develop themselves. This type of inner mental and emotional work is non-negotiable if you want to be truly powerful. And I do, Brianna, more than anything ever. But I'll use my power for good, so make it happen. Powerful people are not the most aggressive. That's great, because I'm not very aggressive unless you piss me off. Aggression is usually a self-defense mechanism. Powerful people are the ones most unfazed by small disturbances and most willing to fully process and work through the big ones. Oh, love that. I mean, really what that's saying is powerful people take their emotions out of situations. So they don't, instead of reacting, they respond. You know what I'm saying? Of course, this is the foundational stuff. Next, you have to work on simplifying your life. Ew, I don't want to. Talking less about your ambitions. Oopsie poopsie. And showing more of your accomplishments once they are completed. I see that. That's a good point. That's a good ass point. I don't think I've ever done that. Gradually make healthy improvements. Assume that everyone and everything has something to teach you. That's what I was doing when I was in the little broke phase. I was like, you know what? I got a lot to learn right now. So look around, bitch, because looking around is free and that's all you can afford. Okay. Become comfortable with vulnerability. Oh, I am. As vulnerability precedes almost every significant part of your life, and intentionally design your daily routine. Through everything, you must be thinking as your most powerful self would. If you learn to see the world and your life through that lens, you can create a life that reflects the intentions of that side of you. It already exists. You just need to know how to fucking tap into it, bitch. And I add the curse words for effect. Guys, that's great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for allowing me to be the voice in your head. Also, the girl that wrote the Reddit post, she emailed me, ma'am. Sorry, I called you ma'am. That was terrible. And I read it. I was just in the middle of doing something, so I didn't respond. But like, that it was such a sweet email. It was so sweet. So I just want to say, like, hey, girl, what's up? No ill will. It's okay. She's a very nice person. And the email was really interesting that you said, a couple of concepts that you talked about. So I'm telling you here now because I'm going to forget to email you back. So thank you for emailing me. I appreciate it. It was very kind. And if you're out there and just, you know what? Here's your homework today or your challenge. You don't have to do it. Do something nice for a stranger and don't tell anybody about it. Or option B, pick up a piece of litter and put it in the trash. There's litter on the street. There's a trash can. Just pick it up. You know, just do something, a tiny little act of kindness today. I think that it will help you with your self-esteem, with your being present in the world, and also making the world a better place, because I don't know if y'all realized it. It's shit. Okay. But it is if you look at it that way. Guys, thank you for letting me be the voice in your head, and I will talk to you next Monday.